Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, do you hear that?
What's that?
Those Taco Tuesday chants, they're still going.
It evolved, baby, from into Taco Tuesday. How perfect was that?
I'm still a little iffy about LeBron's, like, the way he approaches that, you know, because I've never heard a Mexican go, ay, 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 ay. But you know what? I'm just going to enjoy it. And I think that's really the lesson from tonight's game in general, is that they kind of trudged through the first half, looked like they were just kind of playing with their food. And then Anthony Davis just hauls off and beats the ever-living crap out of the Memphis Grizzlies. The Lakers win 120-91. That was some Shaq-type stuff.
Bro, that was like the Shaq comparison's perfect, because it was like all free throws.
Yeah.
And it was like, they can't guard him free throws, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, whether it's on offensive rebounds or these like moves off of the dribble or just all of these different situations where it's just like they just couldn't guard him, man.
Yeah.
And like, we go 26 for 27. Are you kidding me? From the free throw line? Like, I am so, we're recording this right after the game, and I am like, I love recording the show. I'm very excited to do this one. I am dying to get to the tape on this.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make a video on that performance, and it's just like,
is it just gonna be his free throw attempts? Like, is it?
Yeah, basically. I'm gonna try and show what led to those free throw attempts, and then maybe a quick cut of what 26 free throws looks like. But holy crap, that was, bro, he just beats the crap out of bad teams. Like, he's obviously great against good teams too, but the Lakers should drop fewer of those like games they shouldn't lose. Tonight was one of those nights, right? Like, if this, they have this game last year, they probably lose it, right?
Yeah.
Because they don't, I mean, they had LeBron obviously, but having this guy who's even more of a more physically dominant than LeBron is at this point.
Yeah.
Like, that's the great equalizer. And like, he was on the way to doing this against Charlotte the other night before he hurt his shoulder. Right.
Right.
And it was obviously still sore tonight, but he just kicks the crap out of bad teams and small teams. So if you're both,
that's the big one.
Yeah, man. Like, then it's curtains for you.
They were just visibly smaller. Every single person that they, so like the Clippers on opening night, right? Every so often, Ivica Zubac was out there guarding him, and you could see that it wasn't such a just kind of unfair advantage with AD, like physically, you know. But every single player that poor Memphis threw at him today, even like Jonas Valanciunas, right? Jonas Valanciunas, he's a big guy, but AD was so much faster than him that it remained unfair when they when that matchup happened. And, you know, it was just one of those nights that it's been a long time since the Lakers had that kind of a night. Like, LeBron had that 50-point game last night, but it was on like some insane or last year. It was on some insane shooting, right? I think he hit his 50th point on like a 35-foot three-point.
That's right. In Miami, yes.
Yeah, and but this just felt different. This just felt unfair. It felt like, okay, yeah, that's actually Dragonfly Jones had a great tweet after the game. He said that Anthony Davis drops 40 and 20 tonight. Last year, or I think maybe even this year, that Lonzo, Hart, and B.I. are averaging like 36 and 24, like combined, or something weird like that. This is why the Lakers went out and got him, and this is why a lot of people consider the Lakers to be just, this is why they are in that conversation for title contenders.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was a play with their food type performance, like you said.
Yeah.
But you have to be of a certain caliber team to be able to play with your food in the first place, right? And every time the Lakers have decided to turn the screws this season on a team that wasn't as good as them, even Utah, who is a good team, like, it's been the same game in the last three games. They kind of fucked around for 2.5 quarters. And then they're like, all right, let's do this. And then the game's over in like 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what the hell just happened? You know? And that's a sign of a good team.
It's also a defense that it's a little weird right? Like, you would think LeBron James, at this stage of his career, not that great of a defender. Avery Bradley, when he's out there guarding opposing point guards, he's technically kind of sort of out of position, right? Danny Green, because he's a shooter, people don't consider him that kind of a defender. Now, Anthony Davis is just absolutely elite. And Dwight Howard, when he was in his prime, was just absolutely elite. And yet, you know, you kind of combine all their skill sets. You have point of attack pressure with Avery Bradley. You have a smart defender in Danny Green. It allows LeBron to be more of a smart defender. One thing I really noticed from LeBron tonight was ball denial. I thought he was tremendous on that. He really interrupted a lot of their, you know, handoffs and stuff like that. I thought that really affected the game. And then, oh, by the way, there's that Anthony Davis guy who just flies around like a freaking vulture raven crow guy. It's insane to watch him move the way he does at the size that he has. And it just feels unfair when he's out there playing the way that he did.
Yeah, man, especially with those bigger lineups, right? Like, for some reason, I mean, I say that as though we can't all see the reason, but like those Dwight and AD lineups have been just murdering teams. That whole, like, they're way too big, it seems unfair. That is especially apparent when it's Dwight next to him in those frontline rotations, man. And it's just this combination of, like, we were talking the other day about how Dwight still has a lot of those skills as a defender that, like, maybe not the athleticism, but still really knows how to do that. Mm-hmm. And you've got Anthony Davis, who's just like, bro, he had so many rebounds in this game that were like anybody else, it was a putback opportunity. It was like one against two type rebounds. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and not all rebounds are the same. Some of them are the ones where it just bounces to you and nobody else is around.
Yeah.
But he was getting like contested rebounds where like 99% of the players in the NBA don't get that board, you know?
Yeah.
And it just, yeah, putting those two together, like you said, man, it's just unfair.
I was actually surprised at how well Dwight moved his feet. Ja Morant is a shifty guard. Uh-huh. And on a couple possessions, they had a switch or something like that, and Dwight was able to hold his own. Now, obviously, you don't want Dwight to have to do that on a regular basis because he just doesn't have that at this stage of his career. But still, like, that's a huge thing. I want to talk about this because we talked about this a little bit the last show in the whole Dwight-JaVale thing. But it's painfully obvious now, right? Like, it's painfully obvious how much better Dwight Howard is than JaVale McGee.
Yeah, I mean, especially, and it was the other way around in the preseason for much of it. Like, Dwight had been playing hard, but, you know, I wonder, part of the Dr. Brar has been kind of advocating this, and you kind of see Dwight is still playing himself back into shape from the surgery and whatnot. And you can kind of see the ice thawing a bit, right? Like, he's not the athlete that he was, but there are some like, oh, check out Dwight, you know, check out the hops on this play. And like you said, he's moving his feet really well. Mm-hmm. So it's like, there's something there. Combine that with the experience that he has and understanding of how to play defense. And also the whole, like, we hope and pray he embraces his role and like gets it, which is what our biggest concern was all along. Oh my God, like 10 out of 10, couldn't ask for anything more than that. And so, like, this is a different team if that's the guy we get all year. Mm-hmm. I'm a little worried about, like, can he do this over 82 games? Mm-hmm. But four games in, man, I couldn't be happier.
Well, I feel like he should be able to do most of this over the course of 82 games. And especially because, like, what the Lakers need, and they're kind of figuring it out, is they're learning how much effort they have to put into wins. Like, I think that's going to be something that we really have to pay close attention to over the course of the season, is without expending more energy than they have to on a nightly basis, can they take care of business on a consistent, you know, consistently? And I think they're starting to figure that out. And like you said, that like 5-minute stretch in the third quarter all season to this point has been like, okay, yeah, there's the energy that they needed to expend. Now just carry the lead and you're good to go.
That's the thing, is that, you know, the first halves have been frustrating, but the end result has been essentially the same, in that all of the best dudes are sitting at the end of the fourth quarter, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the Lakers haven't played a close game down the stretch yet. They were down by a good 8-10 points against the Clippers, and then they've blown out the other three teams, right? Mm-hmm. And so just that, that's the crazy part, is it's not like, oh, they're up by 12 at halftime, and then that turns to 18 or 20 in the third quarter, and then you sit them. It's like, it's close, 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 and then they just completely dominate for like 6 minutes, and yeah. then they get to bench everybody. It's just unbelievable to see. Bro, yeah. it's been so long. It's been so long since we got to see a team like this. It's so fun.
That crowd tonight was incredible. Shouts to everybody who was there. Let's take Hell a quick yes. Let's take a second when we come back. I want to talk a little bit more about JaVale and whether or not this is just going to be something that we have to care about moving forward is, you know, having to sweat through JaVale McGee minutes. I want to continue to give Anthony Davis more props. There's plenty of stuff to get to there. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope made a field goal tonight. That was kind of cool. Garbage time. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was able to make an appearance. So plenty of stuff to talk about and look forward to. The Lakers have a couple days off here. They don't resume action until November. But there's plenty of stuff to get to here over the course of the show. All right. Single game plus minus from a blowout especially is not a great way to analyze basketball, right? That's just not, that's not usually a great way to, or it's not a great foundation to giving analysis on basketball. But I do think that Dwight's plus 22, because like you have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, he has a plus 26. Quinn Cook goes for plus 25, but I think that has a lot to do with the fact that they were playing in garbage time and extended. Well,
KCP was really good tonight, and he was the plus minus leader for most of the game.
Yeah.
He was like plus 10 when he went out in the first half in a game that was essentially tied. Mm-hmm. So even before he went nuts, I was just cracking up. I was thinking of you while KCP hit his like fourth shot in a row in garbage time. But he was really good on defense tonight.
Yeah, and we'll talk about him because I do wonder if that's going to be a trend. Like it is basically a trend at this point. I think he's one of the Lakers plus minus leaders, just in terms of raw plus minus. But I want to again focus on Dwight, and so obviously what he does defensively sets a tone, and it makes for the impact that you see, especially as we saw it in the last couple third quarters. But I also want to talk about offensively. This can't go unnoticed. He's not like complaining for post touches. The Lakers aren't giving him post touches. Basically, what he has become is the idealized version of Dwight Howard, both on the defensive end and on the offensive end. And I think that that offensive strategy and offensive approach has made for just as big an impact as what he's done on the defensive end, because that's all people have been waiting for from Dwight. Just defend your ass off, dunk when you get the chance to dunk, roll when you have to roll, don't beg for post touches that you don't deserve, and go out there and make that kind of an impact. And again, like you said at the end of last segment, 10 out of 10 in accepting that role. And if that's the role that he accepts, then he becomes a legitimately valuable player for this team.
I had a video about Dwight's offense out on Monday, and that's what you're saying right there is exactly what it was. And he's taking joy in those moments that, like, he sets a good screen and it frees a guy up.
Yeah.
And you see, like, a little fist pump, you know, like, hell yeah, like, we got the bucket. And, like, the fans are seeing it too, right?
He
and
almost killed Jay Crowder tonight.
Bro, he almost killed Terry Rozier the other day. Yeah. He's going to set, like, at least one or two illegal screens in every game.
I'm fine with
And I'm fine with it. But his plus minus, so you said absolutely correctly that, you know, plus minus in one game is not a big thing. And honestly, plus minus in four games is not something to necessarily go off of. But plus 22 in this game against Charlotte the game before, plus 23. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a guy who's playing like 18 to 24 minutes, right? He's not a starter. So plus 22 tonight, plus 23 the game before, plus 13 the game before that in only 19 minutes in that game against Utah. Like, these are massive. And I didn't look at the Clipper game, but I think he was a positive in that one too. But like, it is noticeably different. Do you screw around with the starting lineup? Do you try to kind of insert that? I know we talked about this a little bit, but like, as evidence is piling up, is that something you consider?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always of the mind, and this isn't really how sports work, so I don't think it's something that they're going to do. Also, I think, oddly enough, JaVale wields more political capital in the locker room than Dwight does, so that's going to be something that has to be overcome as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm always of the opinion that while something might be working, you can always also potentially improve on that thing, right? You're not a Marvel guy, but in Black Panther, there was the line, the exchange between the Black Panther and his sister. Basically, he was like, my previous like suit worked perfectly fine. And she said, it might have worked fine, but it can still improve. It can still get better. And then like,
I actually saw that one.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you. Awesome. but that's kind of where I'm at with Dwight here. And it goes back to something that we said about the team last season. The starters on the Lakers have to dominate because that's when you get most of your minutes with Davis and LeBron out there at the same time. And if they aren't dominating, that puts a greater burden on a different kind of lineup, a different kind of combination out there. And I think personally, you know, sorry, JaVale. JaVale has kind of made his bed here also, right, with playing so obviously bad. Like, frankly, nothing has summed up JaVale's season more than that play, that flagrant foul that he took on Jonas Valanciunas.
He couldn't move his feet. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Right. No, that's what I mean. He couldn't stay with Jonas. Like, not exactly a fleet-footed player. Takes a cheap foul, right? And then also, like, usually when a player has a cheap foul like that, they'll even like try to walk over and ask if they're okay. But he commits that foul, yanks on Yona on JV one way up top, pushes him in the back, watches him kind of like fold up, accordion up on the floor, and just like walks away from it. But the point here is that like I felt like this is the kind of thing that JaVale, like, if he wants to look around for blame, like, he can just kind of look at himself here. And I think at some point the Lakers should probably either insert Dwight Howard into the starting lineup or start getting him into the game a little earlier so he spends more time alongside LeBron and AD.
Yeah, the first one, the starting. Like, you made the correct observation that JaVale probably has more political capital in the locker room than Dwight. I don't think it's by much, though, in that, like, Dwight Howard is a respected veteran in that his game is respected, right? Like, the issues with Dwight have always been other stuff or, you know, like, you don't understand what type of player you are and what you're good at. And so, like, if he's doing that, you know, Dwight Howard has more respect in terms of his game. Dwight Howard freaking knocked LeBron out of the playoffs in 2009. Mm-hmm. And so this isn't like a Caruso Rondo type of situation or Caruso over veterans type of situation. It's, you know, like if Dwight's balling and JaVale's loafing, I don't think he's going to have too many people in his corner in the locker room being like, oh, that's not fair to JaVale. You know, you're playing this young guy. You're not, you know, you're playing a dude that's established, has been good in the league for a very long time.
Yeah. This isn't Devontae Kaycock.
Right.
Right. Like this is a former superstar, former MVP candidate, right? He didn't win MVP, did he?
Dwight never won MVP, but he was always in the running. Yeah,
he had a good case for it that 2009 season. I remember that.
And he won like three straight Defensive Player of the Year awards or something like that. Yeah,
he definitely has the credentials to make this case for himself. It's just a matter of how far has that stock dropped over these last few years, because it has dropped considerably. It's, you know, but it we're also talking about JaVale McGee, who's kind of sort of a joke in some circles. So anywho, I think it's pretty obvious there. You got to get Dwight in that starting group. And look, the Lakers' identity this year is going to be made off of the defense, apparently, that they can play, especially with Davis and Dwight out there at the same time. So get those guys out there as often as you possibly can at the same time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And exactly what you said about, like, when the Lakers have turned the screws in each of those games, that's where they've done it. Yeah. And it's led to, you know, more open court opportunities. And now all of a sudden, those threes where there was a, you know, lid on the rim, now they're nice and wide open for good mm-hmm. 3-point shooters. And it all works itself out.
Yeah. I particularly, like, I was a huge critic of the move, and I am happy to have been proven hilariously wrong to this point on that front.
Hell, bro, you are not alone on that. I was too, and I am thrilled. I could not be happier with Dwight Howard.
Yeah. God, what a world.
What a world, man.
All right, let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we have a few finishing touches on this show while I still have a voice. Hang tight. We'll be back here in a bit. So a previous conversation you and I had about LeBron was his approach to the game and which way that, you know, we would prefer to see him approach the game. And I think this is going to be something that he figures out how to balance over the course of the season. He, again, like Dwayne Wade notwithstanding, and Dwayne was incredible when they were on that Heat team. Chris Bosh, also really good. But I don't know if he's had this kind of talent next to him. Like, this is arguably a top three player in the NBA.
You're talking about in terms of an individual player?
Uh-huh.
At this point in time, AD is a better player than Dwayne Wade was when LeBron joined. And D. Wade was like a 30-point-per-game guy the year before. Now, he was kind of alone on that mm-hmm. team where he scored 30 a game. But, like, yeah, this version of AD at 26, he's 26. He's freaking younger than Buddy Hield. This guy is the best player that LeBron's played with.
And I think learning to play with Davis is going to be a process in and of its own. But we have now seen a couple examples of force of nature LeBron. And then tonight, as Davis was playing his ass off, taking a step back and facilitating a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But even while he did that, I still liked some of how he approached the game. I'm a little nervous about his free throw shooting again. Like, did you notice some of the stuff he was doing at the free throw line?
Yeah, some old habits die hard. I mean, he was 7 of 8 from the line, though. He was very good.
No, it's just the, I just don't want.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong game. Sorry. I've been like geeking out on box scores.
No, he went 5 of 7. He was fine from the line. But it was just like the way, like he held the ball so long that at one point I thought Valanciunas and JaVale were just going to start fighting before he got the shot up. So that's a different thing altogether, different subject altogether. But the way, how do you feel about this kind of approach, having seen it work, albeit against a bad Memphis team? They're probably going to be at the bottom of the conference this year. This version of LeBron facilitating a little bit more, and force of nature LeBron. Now that we've seen both of them, have you changed your stance on which one you prefer?
I mean, I prefer force of nature LeBron. I'd also prefer to not use force of nature LeBron against the Memphis Grizzlies in October, right? Mm-hmm. This, like, having AD and having a guy, like, so one point of clarification I want to give on the AD versus Wade comparison in terms of, like, who the best player that he's ever played with is like, Wade was a guy who could take over in a playoff game, and AD's mm-hmm. been great in the playoffs. I don't want to sound like he hasn't been, but Wade's done that at the highest levels of the playoffs, including the finals. You give him the ball and he can dominate against a high level team that knows exactly what you want to do because you've played them 6 other times, mm-hmm. and Wade can still get his in those situations. Remains to be seen with AD. He's a little bit different in terms of how he gets his points.
Yeah.
That being said, having a guy like AD who can just chew up these undersized and or bad teams is great for the whole load management concept of LeBron James, man. He played 28 minutes tonight, LeBron did, and was mostly in facilitator mode, decided to attack a little bit, was kind of fucking around at the end, and he had a few turnovers in this game, but they are easy minutes. I made this analogy the other day on the LFR pod, but like, you know how in baseball they talk about the types of pitches that you throw as opposed to the number? Mm-hmm. Like, if you are up 6-1 in the third inning, you know, those are pretty easy pitches, you know, 30 through 85. It's different if it's a scoreless tie or it's a 1-1 game or something like that, and it's a high pressure situation, you got to win this game type situation. Those are just different pitches in terms of stress.
Yep.
These are very easy 28 minutes that LeBron had tonight, all things considered. He'll get his numbers, don't get me wrong, but from a like him having to tap into the whole force of nature thing, man, let's save that for the really good teams, for the playoffs. Let AD kick the crap out of these bad teams.
Yeah, I think, one, in general, I agree with your sentiment that you don't want him to have to use that against Memphis. That said, I do think there's a correlation between the way he approached the first half and how the Lakers looked in the first half. Like, we're still going to see that, I think, all season. But I also want to get back to the concept of like the easy pitches or easy minutes. It was so easy for him tonight playing 28 minutes that he was pissed that he was out, like that they took him out at the end of the game there. Like he was, I forget who tweeted it. I think it was Ali, but, he basically said that like Phil Handy had to like calm him down. Like, no, I mean, you don't need to go back out there for this. You guys are fine. And I think that's a really telling moment there and the kind of moment that the Lakers really need. And I think the last point I want to, finish on here, unless you have anything else, the last point here is this game makes me a lot more confident about their ability to really take care of business these next like 10 games or so.
Yeah, let's just keep AD healthy, man.
Yeah.
This game started with some nervous moments with that shoulder, brother. And like, bro, we talked about this all offseason. He's a guy that's going to go back to the locker room like once a week.
Yep.
This is just what it is to root for Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. And you know, he was able to plow through and then some, but this is going to be our life, you know, like
literally plowed through the Grizzlies.
Yes, he did.
I think there's, I agree, obviously. I went full like dad soccer coach moment where I don't know about you. So my dad, when I was playing sports, would basically tell me, if you're out there, I don't want to see you limping. I don't want to see you favoring your, you know, whatever you feel like you have hurt or whatever. If you're out there, you're not allowed to show that pain or whatever. And like looking back now, I'm like, I'm not allowed to show pain. What the fuck? But I went into like, I felt myself going into that mode, like either get him out of the game or stop nursing that shoulder. Just stop going there for my own sanity. And maybe that's what my dad was saying. Like, I don't want to see my... No, he was just a psychopath when it came to my sports.
Hey, but, Byron Irwin, son of Byron Irwin.
He does cross his arms quite a bit. But yeah, I felt myself doing that with Davis tonight. And I do think there's something to the point of, if he's going to be out there, he had better be 100%. Because we know what the Lakers are now probably capable of. Like, we're starting to get a clearer picture of that. They are not capable of that stuff if he isn't 100%. So these next, I think they have, what, 2 days off? They don't play tomorrow or Thursday. They're back in action on Friday, the Lakers. I would probably not have Davis practice one of those days.
You agreed.
And I would just really get him focused on what it is. I actually really want. Do you know what's wrong with the shoulder? Have they announced? Like, is it a sprain? Is it a strain?
They haven't announced it. They acted like it didn't exist. Shout out to Lauren Jones, who's a great young reporter who initially reported that. And she's got sources inside the Lakers. I am fully aware of this. So I felt bad for her the other night when people were killing her for saying that AD had an issue with his shoulder. I think it happened on that dunk. Mm-hmm. But the Lakers have been acting like, oh, no, what do you mean? And then the first time they really acknowledged it was, you know, right was before tonight, before the game tonight. So, I think it happened on that dunk attempt where he missed and front rimmed it. That's usually labrum type stuff, but this is, you know, out of my element. The one thing I will say, I tweeted this out. If you count the times he fell on the ground tonight, he would have had a triple double. This dude has no, and like, I say this full well knowing the benefit of this, because this is why he gets able to get 40-20 in 31 minutes. He has no grasp of the idea of like risk versus reward. I was telling my brother this tonight that it's like you know how shot selection is for like a great scorer?
Yeah.
That's what he is with effort. His effort selection is awful, meaning that he will like dive into these like really precarious situations. It's like MF-er, we are up by 25. Can you stop?
Yeah.
You know, and he's just got no, and that's what's great about him. Like, because when he in closer situations, it's fun to watch because he will completely take over like he did tonight.
Yeah, he basically carries himself the way, and I think this has a lot to do with the fact that he had that crazy growth spurt, right? He was short, and then all of a sudden he was 7 feet tall. And, like, could you imagine if you were your height and then, like, woke up one day 7 feet tall and crazy athletic?
Bro, I would be dunking on everyone for eternity. I get it.
Yeah, like, I really think that's what it is. It's like, he's like that kid. He's like Shazam, where you just, like, wake up one day, you're like, I can jump over buildings now? All right, I guess I'm just going to jump over every building I see. Why not?
Hell yeah.
Even if it, like, takes years off of my life watching him play with as much as the Lakers have on the line with him. This was fun, though. Great win. Great moment, too. The Taco Tuesday moment was a lot of fun. Jack in the Box is actually finally, like, they raised the points on a year that the Lakers probably don't need them raised to 111. Though, did they actually hand out tacos? I think they did, yeah.
Yeah, if it's under 111 in a win, yeah.
Yeah, even by the traditional definition, they would have given out tacos. So good stuff there from the Lakers. This is a fun team, man. I really think it's a fun team, especially as they start to figure out like who should be playing more. I'm still not thrilled in Alex Caruso's usage. Only played 13 minutes. I wasn't thrilled about that. Even while I acknowledge that he has looked bad offensively, if the Lakers are going to base their identity off of defense, and he's one of he's probably easily their best point guard defensively, then you probably want to play the guy who is your best point guard defensively. But either way, great win, great stuff. We have a couple days off. If I can get the iTunes questions back up, I will, and I will answer those over the next couple days as we get ready for that game Friday night. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.